Welcome to the UTG podcast, and you'll see that we're back here in the studio with Stephen Grant. So welcome, Stephen.
Yeah, good to be back with you.
So this is your prime opportunity now where people can see us, that you can fat shame me once again and tell everybody.
Well, you're looking very svelte.
Oh, there we go. Sporting the UTG
with your
brand.
UTG hoodie.
Yeah, these are new.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting mine.
Yeah, well, hopefully they'll be available to lots of different of the contributors. So today we're going to be, this is really the second episode of a series that we're doing on the report that was done by the Bible Society called A Quiet Revival.
Yeah.
And it was a very interesting report.
Yeah, out of the blue.
Yes. And obviously you've listened to the interview we did.
Yeah, I did. It was really interesting, actually.
And I found it really helpful to kind of have the chance to chat with the folks from the Bible Society and kind of inquire a little bit more in detail about mm-hmm. the kind of logic and the rationale behind the report. But obviously, the whole purpose of this episode and the next ones is to kind of talk about some of the talking points that came out of that report. So today, I suppose, we're wanting to think about this kind of whole generational shift that's taken place, that the difference between how the gospel has in or how it interacts with people from a past generation to this generation. So what did you notice as you read the report?
I was actually quite surprised by the report when I read it initially. Before I listened to the podcast, I actually read through the report, which is available online and is worth having a look at.
And we'll put a link in our show notes.
Because they've got key findings at the beginning of the report, which summarise what the data points to. And you can also see how substantive and, reliable the data is in terms of that, you know, polling mechanism that was employed. So that was interesting too. It was a bigger survey than I thought it was initially. And the results were really quite surprising to me, because they were a bit counter to what I had assumed the situation in our culture was and had been for some time. So the things that really jumped out to me was the pointing out of the change in the groups within society that are going to church and are interested in spiritual things, more men than women. More young men as well was a surprise to me, big surprise. And also what was less of a surprise, because anecdotally, many people, myself included, have noticed this, that this generation coming up have a real inquiring mind about them, and they have no fear of investigating lots of things, including Christianity. And the report, amongst many other things, emphasizes that.
So it might be helpful just to kind of reference the fact that this report that was done was based on some YouGov polls plus focus groups and that kind of thing. And so there's a statistical analysis in that. And I think that if you think back to our country back in, say, the 70s, and you have this whole church-going culture, which was kind of waning and on its way out, but still was it in the census then over 90% identify as being Christian. But really, I think that what in a sense epitomizes that generation was, it was a BBC interview done with the people from Monty Python, and it was John Cleese and Michael Palin, and they were being interviewed about, it was the 79, so it was the release of The Life of Brian. And the church, there was some folks there who were Christians. I think it was Bishop Moggridge or something like that. And he was basically hugely disdainful of, and it was a horrendously slanderous, blasphemous film. But the whole thing was that the way that the culture of the day was starting to becoming much more vocally against Christianity, against the gospel. It was, the gospel was there to be mocked, and they were the first to kind of break that ground. And really, that has continued as a trend right the way through to this present day. But the difference now is that there's an entirely different attitude. That generation mocked it, disdained it, rejected it. Today's generation, though, they're different. There's a much more kind of a genuine kind of even respect to inquire into it, which is different.
Yeah, I mean, I still think that it's obvious that we live in a secular society. Our country is secular. And so although there have been percentages of increases within the report of people who are going to church or are investigating, amongst other things, Christianity, but certainly are moving away from this just blind adoption of an atheistic worldview to investigate other possibilities that they haven't had any experience of. So this isn't a returning to what's been rejected by them. This is a genuine curiosity and an investigation to find out for themselves. Something that they've had no experience of whatsoever. So you have, in my experience, and what this report is definitely pointing to, is people have no baggage in terms of good or bad experiences with religion. They get no experience and are disillusioned with the status quo, which is an atheistic status quo that provides no real intellectual satisfaction, but also no spiritual satisfaction. And there's an emptiness and there's a loneliness and there's a search for identity. All these things that are so characteristic of our day. And people are most definitely, particularly young men, turning to investigate the possibility that Christianity or other religions can fill that void or have something to say to them, or are worth having a proper, mature, adult, informed debate about.
Yeah, and I think it's useful to point out the fact that the report isn't claiming, although it's titled A Quiet Revival, it's not claiming that this increase in church attendance is the same as genuine conversion, religious belief. It's just saying there's more people going to church.
Yeah. And it's more than that. It's not just attendance. And we might talk about that later. Yeah. That there's a significant shift in people's engagement with church. The people that do go are going with a different mindset or different object in view.
Yeah.
Which is most definitely not just adopting a cultural norm, but actually trying to grapple with things themselves and find out what this is all about and go deep.
Yeah, and I think that it was, I think there was a report in the Times where I think there was a sentence that was used, which was that they were looking to engage with something that had been denied them.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Because, again, it was the BBC journalist Emily Maitlis. She was on a YouTube news channel, the news agency, and she did this kind of piece about this very report, because the Quiet Revival report has been picked up by huge amounts of
news channels. Saw that across media, and it's popping up.
Yeah, and it's mainstream media, not just Christian media.
Yeah,
but she did this kind of whole investigation, and it starts off with her narrating this Billy Graham campaign that he did when he went to the city of Sheffield in the early 80s. And she, as a young student, was there and she went to that. So she was somebody, probably representative of many, who have been exposed to some kind of gospel truth or presentation of the scriptures. Mm-hmm. And yet she, like many, heard it, rejected it, went off in a different direction. And yet, a current generation, they've just never been exposed to it, because there's not the same kind of proliferation of gospel activity in our country as there once was.
Yeah. I mean, we're having, in our local church, we're having an outreach week at the moment. And it's interesting to me that the largest amount of people who are coming along, who are not part of the church, who've been invited, are young men, significantly more young men And you would always historically have associated church going with women in the UK. And that would also have been anecdotally true as well in my experience. But it's not true now.
No.
And there are reasons for that, I think, in our culture. You know, famous influences, podcasters and so on, who also are engaging. They're not Christians, but they are engaging with Christianity and investigating it.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to see the journey that they've been on. So I suppose, like, Jordan Peterson is a prime example. And we're not suggesting that he is somebody who is a gospel believer, but we are saying here's somebody who's moved from a very secular perspective to a much, not even an inquiring, but an actually now kind of pontificating on the extolling the virtues of biblical truth, because his first kind of encounter with it was all the wokeness that was coming through kind of Canadian academia, and that forced him to kind of reevaluate. And that reevaluation has led him now to a much more biblical view of life. And he's not the only one. I suppose you've got Joe Rogan, and you've got others like them that are, they're much more sympathetic. And their journey of inquiry and respect for and genuinely looking at the biblical narrative is obviously influencing others to do the same.
Yeah, and the likes of Joe Rogan, who's, as most will know, the most popular podcaster in the world, who speaks to an audience, not solely men, obviously, but a significant portion of his audience are younger men. And, you know, Rogan kind of speaks into that vacuum in the culture that he just so happens to have filled. Because he also has long-form podcasts of 2 and 3 hour conversations. So when he speaks about any subject, he tends to, it's not, you know, a very superficial investigation into something. He'll talk at length with people about any manner or any number of subjects. And including in that, he has had Christians on. And he has, in the same way, engaged with Christianity through these Christians as he would do with other subjects, which is a change, because Christianity was not something in my lifetime that was treated like that by people like Rogan in my day. You just wouldn't have had that serious conversation and debate.
Yeah. Do you think, though, there's a difference there between the US and the UK in that?
Well, I think that the US is more biblically aware, and there's a huge, it's mixed in with politics, and there's more of the Bible in their culture than there would be in our culture.
Yeah.
In their politics, you know, their religion, Christianity is tied up in the national conversation in a way that it's not in the UK. That's true.
Yeah, I think that in certain, like, knowing Christians that live in Texas, they talk about cultural Christianity. So because of that, people...
A nationalistic Christianity, I would say, as well, now.
Yes.
Is a thing over there.
And so therefore, purely from a marketing perspective, if you want to sell products, then if you can tap into that from an... Like, that's good. So if you think about media person who likes of Larry King of a past generation, he would be quite happy to have Al Mohler, John MacArthur on his TV show to debate biblical things, because he knew that there'd be a ready audience, whereas that's probably not been the case in our country.
I'm interested, though, particularly in the Joe Rogan interview, Wesley Huff. So Wesley Huff is quite a niche, or he had quite a niche worker ministry or space. So he's an academic, and he's speaking to biblical texts with a very authoritative position in the world. So he's someone who speaks authoritatively about quite an academic aspect of Christianity. Some of the historical evidence for the reality of biblical texts and language and so on. And Joe Rogan spoke to this chat for 3 hours, hours, 15 minutes about that subject and the gospel that comes out of the Bible. So that wasn't so much a cultural commentary as a really detailed, almost niche aspect of Christianity that was being talked about in this podcast, which astounds me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether you get that in the UK, I don't know, probably not. But of course, many people in the UK listen to Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
And are impacted by him. Lots of people of that demographic, particularly the male demographic, because he has this sort of male UFC type of persona of...
But again, it's interesting because if you think about it, I remember watching an interview and it was between Piers Morgan and Stephen Myers, who's like a PhD Cambridge graduate. And again, on a very similar topic to the Joe Rogan interview. But what was interesting is obviously Piers Morgan is doing that in America.
Mm-hmm.
And he's interviewing a British academic. And again, his whole questioning was along the lines of a bit creation and evolution, intelligent design. And I was quite surprised that this academic from Cambridge was saying that nobody in academic circles now is actually kind of would accept the Darwinian evolutionary explanation. And actually what is fitting to the evidence that they discover in science now is a biblical narrative. Now that's different. And it's also, if you go back to the fact that even past generations, they did not have the access to all the kind of really, really good, robust scientific information, whether that's to do with intelligent design and those kind of issues, or whether it's to do with the texts of scripture or even the historicity of the Lord. So you got people like at Tyndale House, Dr. Peter Williams, who's there, and all the work that they're doing at Tyndale to kind of show that there's a credibility now. So, because before you could just say, well, we don't really know if there was actually a person called Jesus Christ who ever lived. And because it wasn't scientifically proven, or however they do that with historicity of it, then it was a case of, oh, well, there's doubt there. But now they've actually said, well, actually, there's more proof of a person called Jesus Christ of Nazareth than there was of Julius Caesar. And there's just an overwhelming amount of evidence because people like Tyndale and other research organizations have gone into that. So for the doubters today and the skeptics, you're having to battle with an avalanche of information which wasn't there before.
Yeah, there's that. And I think that combined with that, in a generation that's coming up, Gen Z generation, they have come through and are facing a world that's different.
Yeah.
And the Darwinian or Dawkins version of that, that kind of almost populist type of new atheism that was pushed, very trendy, very well articulated, but ultimately not that robust when subject to examination by their peers.
Yeah.
Not by people in the street like me who have really no scientific knowledge, but when you have other people of equal or greater scientific knowledge and expertise who would not just accept that the positions that they would put and would demonstrate the holes in it. You've got that, but you've also got the fact that that worldview leaves people empty, without hope, and does not actually reflect properly people's true life experience either.
No. I think that the whole new atheism, as it was dubbed back 10, 15 years ago, I think that there's two things I think that's really significant about that is even from a kind of, they talked about the four horsemen of new atheism, like Dawkins, Hitchens, Dennett, Sam Harris. And they were very popular. But what was really interesting was, as you say, that there was major flaws in their argumentation. And although the some could debate, well, Hitchens was a very good debater, but the whole problem was that actually when, as you say, the people who were involved in their field started to really dig deep into their argumentation, they found it was massively flawed. And Justin Brierley, on his podcast, where he talks about the rise and fall of New Atheism, he says he thanked the Lord for Richard Dawkins, because he found that it was because of him that many people who had just made the assumption that the Bible was outdated and irrelevant and full of contradictions, and that their scientific reasoning was much more valid, his kind of pop culture nearly argumentation made them question, and it actually made them re-examine their assumptions about the irrelevance of the gospel and Christianity, and has actually made them realize that those assumptions were false. And for many of them, it's actually made them embrace the truth of the gospel.
Yeah.
And that's the first thing. I think the second thing, as you pointed out, was this kind of personal kind of story. There's a hopelessness about
it. Yeah, I mean, it just doesn't ultimately fill the gap or meet the need that people have. So you can adopt a worldview, a philosophical worldview, in a kind of technical, intellectual kind of basis, and have arguments and debates and all that kind of stuff. But when you go home and you suffer a bereavement, or you suffer loss, or you're subject to illness, or you lose your job, or you're wondering, you know, about significance and identity, and you're wondering about, you know, the big question, you know, who am I? What am I doing here? What about the future? What about death? All these sorts of things. The hopelessness of an answer that excludes God and excludes anything beyond the tangible and physical, or excludes anything that can be explained away by, you know, a scientific equation or a chemical equation. The intangibles of life that we all understand are there, but if you've got a worldview that excludes them, at some point you've got a problem, because your worldview is not answering these questions and is not providing what you need, or it's not fulfilling, even intellectually, never mind emotionally, socially, spiritually, and so on. And, you know, I don't think it's any coincidence that the same demographic in Scotland that this report represents, which we should say is England and Wales, but the same, that's the demographic with the high suicide rate in Scotland.
Well, I was going to say, and it's the fact that suicide is the biggest killer of those under 50.
And those under 50, male in particular, is the demographic, and even younger than under 50, really under 35, that this report shows that there's been an unusually big surge in church attendance since 2018. So you can write through the COVID years and so on, where a lot of the norms of our society were disrupted, the certainties removed, huge skepticism about authority and the kind of acceptance of authority within society is gone. So people question things, people doubt things, people want to know, people want to discover for themselves. And I think this has all come together. And that one of the outcomes is that you have what this report has identified as people of that demographic seeking answers in a place that 10, 15, 20 years ago, they just didn't even think to go to church, which was a failed, flawed, finished reality in our country. You know, religion was done. The churches were all dying and turned into nightclubs. And, you know, that was the narrative. That if you were associating with that, you were associating with it purely because of historical, family, traditional associations. But yeah, it certainly wasn't something that you'd be embarrassed about. You know, I remember being at school and, you know, huge minority of people were interested in Christianity, tiny minority, I should say. Mm-hmm. And it was never talked about. It just would, people would mock you, or yeah, it wasn't even taken seriously as a characteristic or an identity to have. The old Bible bashing type of caricatures that, as you say, TV played up to.
Yeah.
You know, the guy, the minister's always the guy with no brains, and, you know, this person that you don't want to be in the sitcom.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
he's the kind of either creepy or
Ned Flanders.
Yeah. It's just not like the serious person in the room.
Yeah.
And nowadays, the serious person in the room could very well be the person who openly says, I'm a Christian.
Yeah. And I think that there has been a wonderful enthusiasm. I say wonderful in a, not in a positive sense, but in a massive enthusiasm for this kind of new atheism and for that explanation of life. And there was the bus slogans.
Of course.
There is no God, which they had to change to, there possibly is no God or something. So just enjoy your life. But you can't enjoy your life.
That's my point about the reality tested.
Yes.
In people's lives coming up short.
Yeah.
Now, the Christian gospel, the Bible, has always spoken to that. The emptiness, the vanity, the book of Ecclesiastes, the wisdom of this world, Solomon writes about it. And he investigated in his day all sorts of things, philosophies, materialism, et cetera, and he at the end of the day, he concludes all is vanity.
Mm-hmm.
There's an emptiness to it. But this is what our culture has discovered. This is one of the big things in our cultural conversation, which is significance, identity. Yeah. These are all big talking points because there are people, this is what people are finding. Not just young but old, you know, people work for 30 years and then they stop working. They're like, who am I? Separated from my employment. You know, I'm lost. You know, what's life now?
And also that separate from family, if you think about the fact.
The breakdown of family.
Yeah.
Yeah, so people can find themselves very isolated.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting that also people are not, according to this report, simply attaching themselves to a community for community's sake.
No.
Which is interesting because you could understand that if people were lost, lonely, whatever, and there's a community that's non-threatening, that's providing solutions to these things, you know, nice people, you know, you can go along, you can be in their company, you can do activities with them, whatever, whatever. But there is also in this report, highlighting the fact that people are wanting to go deep into the teaching of the Bible.
Yeah, and I think that that speaks into the fact there's a distinction between just the idea of belonging to a group.
Yeah, there's that expression, you know, belonging without believing is no longer an option.
And I think that that is how our culture explained the church or Christianity in the past, is that, yeah, you found some people that you've gained acceptance
like
amongst.
Like a crutch.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can't cope with life. So you need that little support group to help you through it. And that's all fine. But we're the realists. We deal with the hard facts of life and we're getting on and doing things. But actually that narrative is flawed and has been proven to be flawed. And therefore, people now are wanting to go to a church, not because it purely provides community, although it does. It's the fact that it answers some of the big questions.
And do you think, interesting, well, I did anyway, that in the report, there is comment about the fact that, and I think in the podcast, the previous podcast, this is highlighted in the conversation, I think it is, that some of the churches, the Christian churches that would be deemed to be quite traditional, you know, focusing on maybe liturgy or the Bible as a huge part of their characteristic and practice, are finding that they are growing more than those that would be more kind of based on experience or kind of music and without the kind of substance of biblical interpretation and the substance of. Isn't that interesting?
It is. I also think, though, that there's a slight I don't know if it's naivety or a lack of discernment, because obviously from my perspective, our perspective, then there's a pull towards the two key kind of, or some of the denominations that are growing more so, is Orthodox, Catholicism, and Pentecostalism. And that's interesting from the perspective that a younger generation tends to be more skeptical of institutions, but yet the Catholic Church, despite all its high profile failings, people have seemingly not been concerned about that and are looking to find meaning, because it's a very antiquated way of exploring God. But that's what people think is authentic. So the more antiquated, the more just unnormal, like Pentecostalism, the kind of unexplainable, then that is, that must be authentic. So there's a drive for authenticity, but sometimes that drive for authenticity isn't being directed in a biblical way.
Yeah, because I think there's a conflation sometimes in people's thinking between what is authentic and what is historic.
Yeah.
So things that are seeped in history and traditional history are not necessarily authentic.
Yeah.
Now, that's not a comment on the Catholic Church per se, but it's simply a statement that when you conflate these two things, then they can lead you to misunderstand what authenticity actually is. I think it's really interesting. I think that we need to be careful not to take out of that report what is not in the report.
Yeah, definitely.
To think that the UK is becoming a Christian country again is not, if it ever was. And to think that the majority of people are going to church, which they are not, it's still a tiny percentage of the population we're talking about. So, but in terms of trends, it's a very interesting reversal of what we were told was a pretty much constant downward spiral,
which would ultimately lead to the decimation of religion in our country back in the, even in the early 1900s. They said religion is just on its way out.
Yeah. Well, it's clearly not.
No.
I mean, clearly not. I mean, what is going to look like going forward, I don't know.
Yeah.
But surely it is a healthy thing from a Christian's point of view to have people inquiring, genuinely inquiring, making up their own minds, not having preconceptions, but coming to Christianity with an open mind and a sincere desire to see if there's something that they have missed in life.
And obviously we will talk in another episode about the implications for a local church, about how they respond to what is, a cultural moment in terms of people inquiring. But just to, in this kind of episode, to focus on the fact that there is this moment and there is this kind of change. Yeah, one of the things that I think that is helpful to remember the fact is that this report isn't saying that there is this kind of Billy Graham-esque stadiums full of people seeking after the gospel.
No.
But it is turning up in small rural England. I remember, I think it was again, the Times ran this article where it talks about this report is reflecting what people are seeing at the local level, that in some small rural church in Hereford, there's this group of young people that are saying, let's go to church today. Let's find out what the church has got to say. Because we've not heard it.
I mean, the word revival is quite, it has associations with the kind of Billy Graham-esque sort of revival type of thing. That's most definitely not happening in the UK. Not even, you don't even hear of it happening. I've never seen it.
But that may not be a bad thing.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, it's unusual in history for Christianity to experience moments like that. It has, but it's not the norm.
No.
Historically, the Christian gospel has spread through people, through localities, gradually. And a kind of national movement's all good and well, but really to me, this sort of moment is probably best recognized and experienced in the smallness that you're talking about.
Yeah.
And someone coming into your church, someone coming into your church, and or a group of young people, or at a university campus, or you know, some environment within your family, and you can identify, okay, yeah, I can see that what this document's talking about is an explanation for what I'm seeing in front of me. Yeah, this is true. There is a change. And another episode we'll talk about, well, that's interesting because the evangelism that we might be involved in needs to understand that.
Yeah.
And adapt to that.
Yeah.
So that the assumptions that lie behind your approach to evangelize people need to be flexible enough to incorporate this.
Yeah.
Which... therefore, you don't make an assumption. I can remember doing presentations, or it could be 15, 20 years ago, in town halls in the area that I live in. And when I was putting the presentation together, my first starting point was always establishing the truth about God, the existence of God, speaking about the importance of the Bible and so on, and coming at really tackling the kind of what you've called the sort of new atheism saturation of society, which said there's no God. So the starting off point for evangelism was, no, there is a God. But that isn't necessarily the case today. It's more a case of in your search for God or in your search for someone.
For meaning.
For meaning, Christianity is something you really should look at.
Yeah.
Because as a Christian, I'm saying to you, you'll find your answers here. It's not that you need to ask the questions, it's that Christianity can provide the answers to the questions you're already asking.
Yeah. I'm just thinking on what you were saying about the revivalism of the Billy Graham type campaign.
Yeah, like 50s and 60s.
Yeah. Sometimes I think that was actually more damaging than it was positive. Because, yeah, there was always that. I think they even recognized that 90% of the people that went forward at those meetings never actually translated to genuine conversion. But the problem with that was that those kind of things, it made the Christians feel good. Isn't this great? All this people coming to hear the gospel. But the reality was that 10% were genuine. 90% are then inoculated to the gospel because I've tried it, don't work. And yeah, you went forward at a meeting and you had some emotional response and that was it. It was that's quite superficial, which is distinct and different to this kind of actually searching for real meaning and all the big answers to the big questions, as opposed to, I've tried religion. I went forward at a meeting, didn't work for me. And I've tried that and have found it to be wanting, which you didn't really try it. You didn't really engage with the real questions of life. You just tried a religious experience. So
I often the way I think about this is that, you know, if you're preaching or teaching or writing and you are simply encouraging people to believe, accept, invest in Jesus, but you never actually explain to them or cause them to really consider, who is Jesus? What Jesus are you talking about? Is this the Jesus of the Bible? Is this the Son of God that you're thinking about? What does that mean? Is this the one who is the incarnation? Sinlessness of the Lord Jesus, his distinctiveness, his death, his burial, his resurrection, and the significance of these things. And let, you know, what Jesus are you, so, you know, someone can preach in a kind of revivalistic, and I'm not denigrating that at all. But if that's all there is, mm-hmm. then you can have someone say, yeah, I want to believe in this Jesus. But believing in Jesus, which Jesus are you believing in?
Yeah. And I think that's, again, something that the report brings out, that when people are using language, what that language means to different people can be wildly different.
Yeah, I noticed that as well.
And that's probably something that really comes into the kind of implications for what we as Christians do and how we take that and how we respond to that. But again, we'll leave that for another episode. But yeah, I think that for me, as I conclude and I think about the report, I am encouraged. I'm encouraged that there is a much more openness, which I think is healthy for our country and as a society at large, to actually have genuine inquiry, and that certain viewpoints and narratives are not just shut down or assumed to be irrelevant or inaccurate, but there's an openness now to actually thinking, well, maybe the Bible does have something to say.
Yeah, and I think it's opportunity, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's you want the opportunity.
Yeah.
I mean, the Bible teaches us that the Christian message is unpalatable because of the content of it.
Yeah.
You know, it tells us we're sinners. It points us to the sinless Savior. So inherent in the gospel are things that are unpalatable mm-hmm. to the majority of people. That's always been true and always will be true. But it's the opportunity to bring this unpalatable truth, for that's what it is, truth, to those who are seeking.
Yeah.
And to those who are inquiring.
Yeah.
And I think that the current climate gives us more opportunities to do that.
Yeah. And however unpalatable, actually, it fits people's experience of life now in a way that possibly people didn't want to accept that it did in the past. So, no, thank you very much, Stephen. And
you're welcome. Good to chat.
Forward to speaking some more in our next episode. So we hope that you'll join us then.